Last week we read chapter 22 and 23. How many people remember 22 and 23? Can we read 23 again? All right. Then I want you to do, well, hopefully, theoretically, we should get through chapter 23 at a faster pace because most of you already know what most of it says. But go ahead and read 23 and 24, please. Numbers. See if I can get 24th chapter in. It's a little bit more in depth than 24th chapter. Yes.
Numbers.
Yeah. Book of Numbers, yes.
Then Balaam said to Balak, "Build 7 altars for me here, and prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams." And Balak did just as Balaam had spoken. And Balak and Balaam offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Then Balaam said to Balak, "Stand by your burnt offering, and I will go. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you." So he went to a desolate height. And God met Balaam, and he said to him, "I have prepared the 7 altars, and I have offered on each altar a bull and a ram." Then the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth, and said, "Return to Balak, and thus you shall speak." So he returned to him, and there he was, standing by his burnt offering, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his oracle and said, "Balak the king of Moab has brought me from Aram, from the mountains of the east. Come, curse Jacob for me, and come, denounce Israel. How shall I curse whom God has not cursed? And how shall I denounce whom the Lord has not denounced? For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him, there, a people dwelling alone, not reckoning itself among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob, or number 1/4 of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his." Then Balak said to Balaam, "What have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and look, you have blessed them bountifully." So he answered and said, "Must I not take heed to speak what the Lord has put in my mouth?" Then Balak said to him, "Please come with me to another place from which you may see them. You shall see only the outer part of them, and shall not see them all. Curse them for me from there." So he brought him to the field of Zophim, to the top of Pisgah, and built 7 altars, and offered a bull and a ram on each altar. And he said to Balak, "Stand here by your burnt offering, while I meet the Lord over there." And the Lord met Balaam, and put a word in his mouth, and said, "Go back to Balak, and thus you shall speak." So he came to him, and there he was, standing by his burnt offering, and the princes of Moab were with him. And Balak said to him, "What has the Lord spoken?" Then he took up his oracle and said, "Rise up, Balak, and hear. Listen to me, son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should repent. Has he said, and he not do? Or has he spoken, and will he not make it good? Behold, I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot reverse it. He has not observed iniquity in Jacob, nor has he seen wickedness in Israel. The Lord his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them. God brings them out of Egypt. He has strength like a wild ox. For there is no sorcery against Jacob, nor any divination against Israel. It now must be said of Jacob and of Israel, 'Oh, what God has done!' Look, a people rises like a lioness, and lifts itself up like a lion. It shall not lie down until it devours the prey, and drinks the blood of the slain." Then Balak said to Balaam, "Neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all." So Balaam answered and said to Balak, "Did I not tell you, saying, 'All that the Lord speaks, that I must do?'" Then Balak said to Balaam, "Please come. I will take you to another place. Perhaps it will please God that you may curse them for me from there." So Balak took Balaam to the top of Peor that overlooks the wasteland. Then Balaam said to Balak, build for me here 7 altars, and prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams. And Balak did as Balaam had said, and offered a bull and a ram on every altar. 24. Now when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he did not go, as at other times, to seek to use sorcery, but he set his face toward the wilderness. And Balaam raised his eyes and saw Israel encamped according to their tribes. And the Spirit of God came upon him. Then he took up his oracle and said, the utterance of Balaam, the son of Beor, the utterance of the man whose eyes are opened, the utterance of him who hears the words of God, who sees the vision of the Almighty, who falls down with eyes wide open. How lovely are your tents, O Jacob, your dwellings, O Israel, like valleys that stretch out, like gardens by the riverside, like aloes planted by the Lord, like cedars beside the waters. He shall pour water from his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters. His king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. God brings him out of Egypt. He has strength like a wild ox. He shall consume the nations, his enemies. He shall break their bones and pierce them with his arrows. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion who shall rouse him. Blessed is he who blesses you, and cursed is he who curses you. Then Balak's anger was aroused against Balaam, and he struck his hands together. And Balak said to Balaam, I called you to curse my enemies, and look, you have bountifully blessed them these 3 times. Now therefore flee to your place. I said I would greatly honor you, but in fact the Lord has kept you back from honor. So Balaam said to Balak, did I not also speak to your messengers, whom you sent to me, saying, if Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord, to do good or bad of my own will. What the Lord says, that I must speak. And now, indeed, I am going to my people. Come, I will advise you what this people will do to your people in the latter days. So he took up his oracle and said, the utterance of Balaam the son of Beor, and the utterance of the man whose eyes are opened, the utterance of him who hears the words of God, and has the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, who falls down with eyes wide open. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and batter the brow of Moab, and destroy all the sons of tumult. And Edom shall be a possession, Seir also his enemies shall be a possession, while Israel does valiantly. Out of Jacob one shall have dominion and destroy the remains of the city. Then he looked on Amalek, and he took up his oracle and said, Amalek was first among the nations, but shall be last until he perishes. Then he looked on the Kenites, and he took up his oracle and said, firm is your dwelling place, and your nest is set in the rock. Nevertheless, Cain shall be burned. And how long until Asher carries you away captive? Then he took up his oracle and said, alas, who shall live when God does this? But ships shall come from the coasts of Cyprus, and they shall afflict Asher and afflict Eber. And so shall Amalek until he perishes. So Balaam rose and departed and returned to his place. Balak also went his way.
First, we will talk about chapter 23. By the way, we have Bibles if you want to use to follow along. There are some in the other room if you want Bibles to follow along, if you didn't have one. Anybody want a Bible to follow along? Yeah, okay. It's on the top shelf. Well, I don't know. It's in there somewhere. Okay, you learned from me last week the name is not Balaam, right? What is his name? Bil-am. Bil-am. And Bil means what? Not. And Am means what? People. Not people. Now, to clarify a little bit clearer for the word not, it comes from everything in Hebrew, by the way, has its base, and it is verb base. And so the word that's been translated, or that word lamed, and bet and lamed for the word not, comes from another verb form meaning something entirely different. So I'll give you a little bit picture about what his name refers to. But basic means to fail, to wear out, and to no longer be of any value. So that's his first part of his name, Bil, and the latter part is Am. So he is, in a sense, of no value. His people are of no value, and he is of no value. That's kind of an odd way of looking at it, but it's an interesting way of trying to find out. And I don't know where, to tell you the honest truth, why the translations have it as Balaam. I have not been able to find out what the spelling perhaps may have been, and even in Ashkenazi. But nonetheless, it's not that important. I just thought it would be very interesting that you kind of keep that part in mind. Now, in chapter 23, there were several things took place here. Do you remember what some of the things took place? What was... Yes?
Well, I thought it was interesting that he opened the mouth of the donkey.
That wasn't it.
And in my Bible...
That was in 22.
Oh,
23,
okay.
We're in...
That was 22.
Yes.
I thought that was very interesting.
All right, technically speaking, from chapter 23 to the end of 24, there was what's called, that lump of into what's called four oracles. All right? The 24th chapter is the last oracle, and it encompasses something entirely different. We're going to basically go over a few of these oracles, if I can use a call that word. But I want to ask you some questions, and you're up to answer them. Why do you think the Creator of Heaven, Yahweh Himself, talked to Bil-am? What was His purpose? Daniel?
Well, why would God talk to Bil-am to start with, like years and years and years earlier? Or why talking to him right now?
Let's say right now.
Don't worry. Well, clearly, God's objective is to bless Jacob.
Yeah.
That's what he's using him for, to bless Jacob. And bless him in the eyes of others. Otherwise, he would never have allowed him to go to start with.
Correct.
I kind of understood it that he had intentions of going down and speaking his own mind.
That was brought out in chapter 22. Right, and that was explained in 22, the reason why it took place. And he was going to, it says there, he was going to twist the words, all right? He was going to go up, he was going to go down there, but he was not going to say the words. He could twist the words, or in a sense, lie. And then the angel terrified him to death. And the man figured, okay, if I want to stay alive, I better do what I'm a job, you know. And so what he's doing here, it lets you know that even a person, or in this particular case, it's Moab who is wanting the curse, right? Remember? And even the enemy, to kind of tell you a picture, even the worst enemy cannot curse if God does not do it first. All right? He says, I cannot curse them at all. Why? Because God said, I blessed them, therefore it will not happen, and your life is in your own hands if you curse them. Bad news, right? And then go way back to Abraham. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those that curse you. And, you know, Bil-am was going to be cursed to death. We know later on in the book of Joshua that Bil-am was killed by, I don't know if by Joshua himself, but by the men who went out to go to war against him. Now, where did Balaam live? Where did he live? Where did he live? He lived far east by the river Euphrates. So we have in the book of Joshua, and we kind of put in our mind that the battle was, you know, only in the land of Canaan. No. And we've already read, or we have read, or will read, no, we have read, rather, where Israel already had been at war several times as it marched up toward just before they cross over into Jericho. Quite a bit of wars are there. And all the way, wars went all the way to the Euphrates River. Because it was a promise by God that that land would belong to Abraham. And in Chronicles, I can't remember what First or Second Chronicles said, that they had the land all the way to the Tigris, the Euphrates River. That was, at one time, Israel. Much, much bigger than it is we think of today, or in the maps we think of today. So Balaam lived on the east mountains, the eastern side of the river of Euphrates. He was east of that side. He was on the mountain side, of the east side of it. Now, as we go down through these things, Balaam asked for certain things. What did he ask for? Three times he did it. But what did he ask for? Okay, you find it very unusual that there were seven altars. Find it very unusual there were seven rams. Do you find it very unusual seven oxen? Three times this was done. And the fourth time, by the end of the fourth time, when he's ready to do this, we're going to find out, actually, the end of the third time, really, we'll find out what took place at the end of the third time as a pattern. Now, I do not know, and I cannot tell you, I do not know if they did this daily for 7 days or did it all at once. I mean, you built seven different altars in seven different locations, and you have a whole offering, and you offer that up to God, and you offer the ram up to God. I don't know but why would you do that? What?
Try to appease God.
Try to appease God. Okay.
They really had a desire to get this thing.
All right. Okay, Daniel. I'm giving you a tough question here. I hope you understand it.
Well, with those two animals, one, it's supposed to be an all gift, everything like that. And actually, it's technically both of them are. But to me, based on what those animals represent in the Torah and what they've used, what they're used other places, is that they are associated to the individuals who are giving them. So, for example, a cow or an ox is associated with a prince. So, if a cow is being offered, a prince is offering up. In it's being done in his name. And the ram would be an offering for an eyewitness. God, please look upon this. So a prince is offering to, in my place, offer this animal and look upon me. That's what I would look at it as.
The ram is always a sin offering. Remember? Goat. Ram is a old goat. And so we're looking at this thing, and you have the whole offering. Now, was was he aware of that from God, that God wanted those offerings? I thought that was taught only in the time when we were in the book of Exodus during Moses' time. Right? How come he knew about it? Oh, interesting question, isn't it? Did he happen to tag along and find out what it's all about, then went back to the land he came from and says, okay, all I have to do, remember, he wants seven things. Seven things and seven things and seven things. Seven's always a picture of what? Completion. Now, he did this three times. Do you find that unusual? We'll talk about that in a minute. 1, 2, and 3. But each one of these times, he had to speak, say something. Even though the offerings were put there, would God have told Bilam, this is what you must do if you want to talk with me? That's what I want you to do. You must do these altars, and you must do the sacrifices, you must do these things, then I'll come and I'll talk with you. It may be. And there's something very interesting here when we take a look at it. And the first, what was the first thing that came up was what? Do you remember? First oracle, he says, I cannot curse. You brought me all the way from the east to curse Jacob. I cannot curse Jacob. Didn't have the ability to do that. And then he told some bad news what's going to happen is that your country is going to be in real bad shape. You're going to lose. So don't go to war. All right? In verse 9 of the 23rd chapter, it's an interesting phrase. I'm going to read it from the Old King James. For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. Lo, the people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nations. What do you think that means? They're not included within the house of Israel. That's true. They will be alone. They will stand alone and be alone. That means they'll be not assimilated. They will remain loyal and dedicated to God. Because God said, I have chosen them. All right? What other group of people has he ever called and chosen? None. The house of Israel. And the New Testament talks about the house of Israel. I mean, you got the city of four squares. Guess what they are? Tribes of Israel. So God has made this point, and he's going to tell them that they will be standing alone. They will not be counted amongst the other, like other nations. They will not be mixed with or mingled with. Now, God said something to one of the prophets. Sons of Jacob, I know who you are. Do you know who you are? God knows who you are. He knows if you're a son of Jacob. I don't. I'm not God. Well, I think I'm very fascinated standing alone and won't be considered or counted amongst the nations. Now, as we get into this farther on, we'll find out what happens to the other nations. We'll get to that in a minute. Something happens to the other nations that doesn't happen to Israel. So she stands alone and she will not be wiped out. Will not be destroyed. All right? And he says here, who can count the dust of Jacob and the number of the fourth part of Israel? I find every fat day. Why would he say fourth part? All right. If a fourth part, he only saw one fourth of them. And the next scene, the king took him to another location so he could see more of them. So what part do you think that he was looking at? When he saw one fourth of them, what did he see? He's coming from the east and he's heading west. Right? Who do you think he saw? Who's on the east side of the tabernacle? is Judah, remember, and his two companions. He only saw three tribes. He only saw three tribes. He didn't see the others out there because they were much, much farther out. And as we see the scenario going, he brings them to another location. And so they can see where they go. And he went to a place of Siphon, meets a watcher, on top of a cliff, that he may be able to see the entire group. And now he says now, and of course, he went to do these altars again and all that kind of stuff. And Balaam said, okay, I got to go talk to God now. And he said, God says, go tell him this. So verse 19, Elohim is not a man. Elohim is not a man that he should lie. Neither is he like the Son of Man that he should repent. He has said, and shall he not do it? Or has he spoken, and shall not it be done good? Behold, I received a commandment, verse 30, 20, to bless. And he blessed, and I cannot reverse it. Now, the king was getting a little bit upset. And he said, neither bless them nor curse them. I'm sorry, I don't have a choice there. I'm going to have to bless them each and every time. It's very fascinating that the enemy will not win. They will not win at all. Now, toward the end of the chapter, we're going through pretty quick here in this particular chapter. He goes on, has one more time. He goes, verse 29. This is the third time that Balaam had the king build seven altars and prepare for these things, and the seven bullocks and the seven rams, and so on and so forth. Now we enter the 24th chapter. Now, I want you to listen very carefully to the words. Something happened at the end of this last time that didn't occur in the other two times. Did not occur. This time, it occurred. Verse 2 of the 24th chapter. He said something very, very interesting. And Balaam lifted up his eyes, and he saw Israel abiding in his tents according to their tribes. And what happened? The Spirit of Elohim came upon him. Didn't happen the other times. He was just supposed to bless, use the word, take the words of God and use them and bless them. Now something takes place differently. Listen to his wording. It's very, very fascinating. All right? Verse 1, real quickly, it says he went this time to seek a different location. And he looked toward the face. And continue on with that verse 3. And he says, and he looked up. He took up this parable and said, whose eyes are open. Oh. Now remember, his eyes were not open on the first two. Now this third thing came along, and the Spirit of Elohim came upon him, and now his eyes are wide open. Now he sees. For the first time he sees. You know, think it's fascinating? Now, on this particular last oracle, he says here, he hath, verse 4, he hath said, which heard the words of Elohim, which saw the vision of. Vision of who? El Shaddai. All right, now, you remember what been translated into Almighty, right? I told you what the basic verb is for that word Almighty. Remember what it was? Destroyer. Now, that's important because he said he did see the vision of the destroyer. Because that's what that word means. When did God get that name, El Shaddai? The flood. After the flood, he got the name called Shaddai. The one who destroys. The one who just devastates. The one who wipes out. Right? And now we're in this last days, it says his last days, and now he says he saw the vision of the destroyer going to do massive intervention and an awful lot of damage. All right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Why it's written as Shaddai here is to let us know he wasn't seeing, quote, oh, the wonderful, loving daddy. He was seeing Almighty, a vision from Almighty, what that Almighty is going to do. This is the last vision. This is the last oracle. And remember, the spirit of Elohim is now on him. And he says, oh, my eyes are wide open. I didn't have to go into a chant. Didn't have to go into any kind of movement. Oh, wide open. Now he's got the picture. All right. Now, verse 7 is a very fascinating thing. He shall pour, okay, he shall pour water out of his buckets, and his seed shall be as many waters, and his king, or his rulership, will be, and it says higher than, a really odd word. Actually, it's Mim Agag. And it really means, I will topple over. The king is going to turn over, topple over something. We think it means a word. There's a man in the kings, and Samuel's got that name. But in breaking it down, it doesn't mean that's the king. Talking about this particular king is going to be higher than, or greater than, stronger than, and he's going to overtop it. He's going to take the top and turn it over. You understand what I'm saying so far? That's why it's a vision of whom? Shaddai. Okay? Shaddai. And the book of Revelations, do you really think it's going to be a wonderful picnic? Or do you see tremendous amount of destruction? Tremendous amount of destruction. That's the vision of Shaddai. All right? That's what we're seeing. Let's go on. At verse 15, he says it again, you know, the man whose eyes are wide open is now saying this. Now he's getting an idea of what it's all about. And it's getting a very fascinating thing. And he said now, verse 6, he says, and he has said, which heard the words of Elohim and knew the knowledge of the Most High, which saw the vision of Shaddai, falling into a trance, but having his eyes wide open. Got the picture. It's important that we pay attention, if we can, try to understand why in Hebrew this is listed as Shaddai in this particular chapter. It's telling us something mighty about God. He's not going to deliver. Now, what we're going to find out in this chapter is what he's going to overtop. Take the top and turn it over. Remember in the first chapter, he will not be among the Gentiles, will not be counted amongst the Gentiles. All right, it's leading us up to something. Israel will not be toppled over. It will remain alone. And the rest of the nations that we see in this chapter will be toppled over. The vision of Shaddai. Have I lost anybody here? All right. Now, he says, verse 17, fascinating statement. We all know it. I shall see him, whom? The king. But not now. I say, behold him. But not now. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a rod, a shaft, a branch, a club, or a tribe. Remember I told you about the tribe? What is the Hebrew word for tribe? Shavet. Shavet is the word for tribe. And when we have a branching out, each tribe, 12 tribes are branching out. Three are branching out eastward, three are branching out southward, three are branching out westward, three are branching out north. Where's the center?
Tabernacle.
Huh?
The tabernacle.
The tabernacle, where the Holy of Holies is. So the branching out from whom?
Yeshua.
Where the authority really is, God Himself. And so we see, try to picture in your mind, and this is scepter. Scepter is a really old English word. But it really just means a branch or a tribe. Something that's coming out from something else. That's all it is. There has to have, if a branch is coming out, then there has to come from a tree or from some root somewhere first. And we have here in the book of Romans, talking about a particular example of a tree. It was an olive tree. And it says the root is holy. So its base is there and the branches go out. And sometimes God is merciful and He will graft on. A wild olive branch. Now, wild one means you're not part of Israel and you're still kind of not in line with that. But we'll just stay working with you anyway. You know, because God has a thing called, one day they'll give a sermon on it, what's called mercy. And he said, now, I must see this star. He's going to do something. It's very fascinating. The scepter or that tribe, that star, that tribe will come, rise out of Israel and shall smite the corners of Moab and destroy the children of Seth. Who's Seth?
Adam's son.
Means the one that was replaced. Now, Seth means the replaced one. The replaced one. Remember? He replaced somebody else. Who did he replace?
Abel.
He replaced Abel. Now, it doesn't mean that Abel is completely replaced, because Abel was considered what kind of person? A righteous person. Just because he'd been replaced by somebody else, righteousness is still there. Abel's righteousness went with him. And Abel's righteousness will be raised up in the latter days. And Abel will have his righteousness. Never had taken away from him. It's just preserved. All right? I made myself a little clearer on that one. And it's quite a fact. The children of Seth, the replaced ones. Fascinating. And we have this, excuse me, I'm going to play on words here now. You've heard us think, what's that word, a replacement for the theology? All right, where all the Christians replace over the house of Israel. The Christians are the real, real people, and Israel is been eliminated. No. Watch out. If you've been grafted onto the real tree, you won't be replaced. However, Apostle Paul does give warning, though, doesn't he? Oh, he can cut you off and put on the other guys who he had cut off. Okay. Keep those things in mind. Now, we're going to go through these through. And we'll talk about some of these nations. Verse 18. Edom shall be a possession. Of whom? Of that star. Of that rod. Of that tribe. Or that branch. Okay. Remember, Israel stands alone and won't be counted amongst or considered amongst the other nations. Now we're talking here about the other nation. The first nation he mentioned is Moab. The next nation he mentioned is what? Seir. Who is Seir? No. Esau joined with the family of Seir to go to war against Jacob. Different family. Two different peoples. He made a pact, a military pact. Go back and read it and find out for yourself. Seir is not Edom. Seir is not Edom. Edom is not Seir. Seir is a different group of people. All right. Then what goes next? Remember, huh? Verse 20. Now, there's a very unusual wording here in Amalek. It says very something usually odd. Now, Amalek was the grandson of Esau. Okay? First Moab, then Seir, now Esau. All right? And it says very interesting, and Amalek was the first of the nations. Now, what do you think that means, first of the nations? Okay. Have you heard the word Rashit? And it means in the beginning. Where does that root broken up from? A thing called the head, Rosh. Meaning one who is the head of it, or the chief of it, the one who is in charge of it. And guess who is in charge of it? Esau. And we have prophecy after prophecy after prophecy. When you start reading the prophecies of what God is going to do to Esau, this is going to tell you what's happening. And he is going to be the number one. He's been the number one person that's been against Jacob at the very beginning. And guess what? He is the chief, the organizer, the one that started the whole thing. And says, now you're going to perish. Oh, the whole thing is going to cease to be. He's going to take this chief nation and he's going to do something with it. What's he going to do? Here's the top. And here's the bottom. He's going to do that. Turn it over. That's fascinating terminology, isn't it? Oh, that is interesting. So we're learning something here from, I hope, these few things. And there's another one called the Kenites. That means smiths, basically. And he took a parable against them and the strong dwelling, and I'll put you in the nest of a rock. Not very good news. Thy nest in a rock. It's no good. They lose. And then the Asher, who's the son of Shem, shall carry, he said, the Kenites shall be worst, they wiped out, and Asher will be carried away into captivity, put them into bondmanship. And so now we're at this point. And another last one is about it says the Kittim. Kittim is just a Hebrew word meaning people of the islands. So a lot of islands, you know, any island. People of the islands, basically around the house of Israel, or the nation of Israel, those islands that are nearby, he will do the same thing with them. He's going to get rid of them. That's why they're not counted amongst. Israel will stand alone. They're not going to be counted amongst the Gentiles, who God, El Shaddai, is going to do some damage to. You understand what I'm saying? So we go back that chapter, verse 23, and you figure out, that's a really odd statement. Israel stands alone, not be counted amongst the rest of the nations. And we say, no, I don't get the picture. He gave them a blessing, but he didn't see what it was about until, of course, the Spirit of God entered upon him, and his eyes were now, got the picture, I see what's going on. I know now what's going to happen deep in the future. Now, he did say a prophecy about himself, that he will see the Messiah himself. Now, we don't know when. We don't know why. It's up between him and God, nobody else. The 25th chapter, we find out he had the people do something different. And of course, then Bilam went home. This is it. So now, have any ideas, thoughts, questions, statements, anything? It's open discussion.
Richard, are they kin to Cain?
Sorry, what?
The Kenites, are they kin to Cain?
No. I have not been able to trace them down. I have not tried to trace them down. The word means smiths. The ones who make iron or make things with iron and steel. Okay? And more than likely for weaponry or for war. That's what I'm assuming, because we're talking about a different area of people, not just someone making a pot.
You do see some Kenites in the Bible that are mentioned being among the people of Israel.
I'm sorry, what?
You do see some Kenites with the people of Israel.
Yeah. But see, the Kenite means just a smith, a blacksmith. The guy who does shoes, you know, for a horse, that's a blacksmith. No, I'm not saying everyone. This particular one is talking about someone who's doing something specifically for destroying or going to war against the house of Jacob. So we're not talking about just ordinary smiths here that would do things of ordinary chiseling, make a chisel, but making tools of weapons. All right, yes.
On verse number 17, why is it that it's the Almighty is saying destroy all the children of Seth? What reason would he want to destroy the children of Seth?
Destroy the people of Seth. Restoring those who are replacements. That's what his name means, the replacement ones. Now, in this, when you just look at these nations, what was their goal? What was their goal? All of them going against whom? Jacob. And if the ones who are going to replace Israel are going to be taken and destroyed. That makes sense to you? Yeah, the word means the replacement ones, the ones replacing Israel. I don't know who they'd be. I'm not interested in finding out who they are. I haven't found as a nation or people. It's just that that's what they are. I don't have great wisdom understanding. I'm just reading what it says. I'm trying to figure it out as much as you're trying to figure it out. Don't have answers to everything. But when I look at words and I look at Satan's and I say, okay, why did he use these words, you know? Why is he saying this now? Why at this particular, the very last oracle is a very hostile one. Right? And yet, the book of Revelation is a very hostile one. Except for the very, very final end. You know, there's some really good news coming afterward. But there's a lot of bad stuff, Hums, you know. Yes.
Just have a thought to share. I don't know if this makes any sense. I mean, it kind of makes sense to me. But quite often when I'm sharing the gospel or, you know, the Torah with people, I find that you know, the Torah is being taught from this perspective. You know, this is the foundation. And what I often tell people is that the devil wants us to see everything backwards. He wants us to read from left to right. He wants us to observe the days and versus the nights.
Okay.
Right? And wants us to, you know, look at the solar versus the lunar calendar. And obviously wants us to look at this, even the Bible, you know, God's Word, from this perspective. This is the foundation. And And I was at a Bible study last week, and I shared that, you know, really what we ought to be doing is this is the foundation, and that we should be looking. Right. So as you're saying this, I'm thinking about all these conversations I've had, and I'm realizing that, you know, that, you know, the toppling over means to get it right.
Yeah. That's cool. That's right. Cool. All right. Yeah. Anyway, that's a cool statement. That's cool. Never thought about that. That's a cool statement. Hey, I got two more minutes. Can't believe it. I'm not even overtime. What happened? Jeff, you want more? You want the time?
No, I just was wanting to answer your question about where the Balaam comes from. Septuagint. Oh. That's how it's spelled in the Septuagint.
Oh, thank you. Okay. That answers my question. I tried to look that up, and I got a Septuagint. I tried to look it up. I couldn't do it this morning at all. Got so bogged down in what I'm doing. But I did not get the Septuagint. I've got the Septuagint, but I didn't have it with me. Well, at least I know where it came from. Any more comments? Any more thoughts? Break time. Oops. Yeah, one more comment.
It really gives me hope, you know, because in all this stuff happening to Israel right now, I feel like this gives me hope that the nations of the world will go against, and God will destroy those nations that go against Eve.
Yes, you know? that is definitely His promise. Oh, by the way, wait, one more comment. You know, some of your King James, Old King James, has the word a unicorn, no such animal. It's a Hebrew phrase for an animal that has a wild animal, or an animal that's not tameable, that has a horn. And you know the only animal right now I can think of that's got a horn on it, not very tameable, but wild, that's a rhinoceros. And when they come and they destroy it. They attack you for no reason, you know. And so it's like kind of like the picture you get. I'm not saying that's what it is, but I would think it's kind of fascinating to think about the one wild animal that, you know, you can become even 20, 30 yards from, we're going to look at you, run at you, and they run extremely fast. Even if they're big monsters, they run awful fast. And man, they don't slow down when they hit. They don't slow down because they don't think about getting hurt. They don't. They got to hurt whenever they hit. You know? So I was thinking about that when you think about that. The old King James has a unicorn in there, which is a fictitious thing. Some people think it looks like a horse, I guess.